Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 14 of In the Database with Nana. Today, I got a special guest, Jim Park, who might beat me to my fandom with the Steph Curry. But good to have you, Jim. What's up, Jim? Talk to me.
Hey Nana, it's good to be here. I wish we just got done watching a Warriors against the Nuggets, but that is not our reality, unfortunately. And I'm sure we'll go over why this is the case.
Exactly. And we will go over why this is the case, but at least we can take some joy that the Lakers are down 3, 0 and 3. I didn't think that I thought the Lakers would win these two home games simply because I don't think the NBA was gonna allow it. But they tried their best. I mean, both the Lakers and the Celtics got the favorable whistle. I mean, the refs could only try so much, you know?
Yeah, you saw that. I don't know if you should call it a meme or it was a thing that the NBA put out as the playoffs were beginning about how the Lakers and the Celtics were tied for the most wins of all time or something like that. So they were campaigning for a Lakers Celtics series from the jump.
Yeah,
So
it's
this is
crazy.
they're not even hiding it.
They definitely were. The commercials were coming in all the way in, like, I want to say we were mid-series game two of the Lakers when the ABC leaked that commercial thing that said Celtics Lakers NBA Finals Battle of 18. I'm like, y'all dead ass.
Really, I didn't see that one. So yeah, it's pretty hilarious. The refs definitely tried to. At some point, the Lakers had 27 free throws to the Nuggets 11 free throws, somewhere down in the fourth quarter. And so to have that kind of an advantage, I mean that's a generational advantage for the Lakers. And the fact that they still lost, that kind of shows you. I had a feeling the Nuggets would take one, on the road trip. I do believe that they are, especially after taking two at home, it just felt like they had a good matchup against this team. And yeah, I don't know anymore. It could end up being a sweep. Maybe it ends in five, but it's looking good for the Nuggets right now.
Yeah, it's looking really good, and I think it'll go to five at least. But if I'm the Nuggets, I try to close it out. I
Yeah,
really
of course.
try to close it out tomorrow. I mean, not tomorrow, the day after, because you got them right now, morality wise. So
Yeah, you look at the way Mike Malone has been coaching that team, the message that he's been giving to, his players, just never be satisfied, never be content with where you are, try to kill them with every opportunity, every chance they get. That's always the message. He always, talks to his team with a sense of urgency, no matter how much he's up, no matter how much he's up in the series, whatever the case may be. He has that sense of urgency every single game.
for sure.
And you love to see that from a coach. Honestly, I feel like that is a very obvious trait any good coach in the NBA would have. And I find myself talking about it and praising it because we didn't see that from Steve Kerr.
Absolutely. And the thing is, like, no matter how people want to say it, closing a series is completely different, especially if you've never been there. And the Nuggets aren't really in this stage ever in their career. They've never been to the finals as a group. So this is a new task, a tall task. It's hard. Don't get off. And we know that nobody has ever come back from 0-3, but records are meant to be broken. History is meant to be made. So never get too comfortable. And with that, Jim, I just want to transition right into our topic. Speaking of never get too comfortable with our Golden State Warriors. Tonight, I want to talk about the preseason, the season, the trade deadline, the postseason, and obviously what's next for us in the off season. And a lot has actually happened throughout this entire each period that they each can be one exact pod by themselves. But we're gonna try to just go over like what really made the key points, the key factors in each. With me to begin with. The preseason, what happened between Draymond and Jordan Poole, Klay Thompson showing up to the season out of shape, not us picking up quality vets and just running two timelines, front office playing games, too much contract talk, too much like non-basketball related talk, all of that coming in before we even start the tip-off game. And I want to start with the Draymond Green situation. I've said it multiple times. I think Golden State handled that terribly again, just like they handled the Draymond situation with Kevin Durant. You just can't keep letting him get away with these behaviors. And people always say we got to take this with Draymond. You know, he does. We got to take the in all the stuff he does, all intangibles on the court, and we have to take his disrespect. No, we don't, because all that disrespect is something that you should not be able to take, because being disrespectful is not a personality trait. And you got to stop letting him be insubordinate, and you got to have some control. And that's something I know, Jim, you definitely want to get into, is management. Do they have power? Do you have voice? What is your role? Why can't, at this point, do we just let players run the team? Because you don't have a voice. For you, for him to feel comfortable to do something like that, it's allowed, because it's been given, and he's been allowed to get away with so many things. He should have been suspended at least 5 games without pay. Or and or like I would, you know, I wouldn't, I don't advocate for violence, but sometimes you gotta do what you gotta do. Jordan Poole should have got his lick back. Personally speaking, that's how I feel. Go get your lick back. To me, I wouldn't have told the team anything. I'd have been like, I bet, whatever. I'm gonna let y'all handle it. Let me see what y'all do. And then all of a sudden, I realized y'all don't suspend me. I'd be like, Jordan, how do you feel? How am I supposed to feel? Am I gonna look like a punk? Look like a crybaby and say, yeah, you guys gotta suspend. Don't put me in that position. You do that yourself. Do that yourself and then come back to me. So once I see the way Golden State front office was running and they were not going to handle the situation, I would have just seen him at ring night as soon as he put his ring on. Boom. There you go. I'm going to take my 20 games suspension. I'm out of here. That's how we roll, you know, because that sends a message clear out, like, I know punk, and he could just move on. And whatever attention he was getting, good or bad, from that situation, Jordan could have handled it from there. And that's something on the front office. So I want to ask your point. What do you think of that situation and how the front office handled it?
I mostly agree with all the stuff that you said. I don't think Jordan Poole is capable of winning a fight against Draymond personally. I think Draymond has a martial arts background, so and he's a much larger man than Jordan, and we've seen how soft Jordan Poole is on the floor. I'm quite sure that would translate into a fighting scenario as well. So now, having said that, I totally agree that the team needed to protect Jordan Poole. You have to forget everything else and put everything aside, regardless of who did it, who did what. It's about seeing whether what happened was right or wrong. And clearly and obviously, Draymond punching a teammate, knocking him out, and that becoming public for all to see is completely and utterly unacceptable. So, of course, the leadership in this situation has to come into the picture. That would be Steve Kerr and Bob Myers and Joe Lacob if necessary. But those are generally the guys that, you know, make decisions like that, whether they need to suspend a player. And I personally would have thought that one game would not have been enough for what he did. That's like a 3 games at a bare minimum situation. And it lets the team know that, yes, leadership is under control and they do take this kind of action very seriously. It's not okay under any circumstance for Draymond to do what he did. So, Bob Myers and Steve Kerr saying, you know what? And they even try to protect Draymond, talking about we're more mad that it got leaked, that the video got leaked, and that this stuff happens in locker rooms all the time. Like, you're defending Draymond. So that just shows a lack of character and a lack of leadership. And then to say like, oh, we're gonna leave it to the players to decide whether Draymond should be there should be Draymond should be reprimanded for what he did or not is just wrong. Like, this shouldn't be left to the players. It should be left to management. That's what they're supposed to do. So it shows an inability for Steve Kerr and Bob Myers to do the things that are sometimes difficult to do, sometimes maybe not the most popular thing to do for the team, but it's what the right thing to do for the team. And that would have given the team an opportunity to say, you know what, like, we're going to punish this guy and we can move forward knowing that he got properly punished, that justice was served, even if not in a way where Jordan Poole, like you said, Nana, wants to get back at him and throw a punch back at him. That may not have happened, but at least he would have known that Draymond, you know, lost money for this situation. And that's the only way you really move forward is that a guy gets properly punished, and that never happened. So that was definitely wrong.
Yeah, that's why I said sneak him, like get that lick back. I don't think Jordan was gonna win that fight. Like, I just wanted him to make a statement because by the time he punches him, there'll be enough people to stop the fight. You know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't going, they weren't going to let him get, you know? So it was just one of those, you know, like, I gotta save face. But for now, because personally speaking, or professionally, what, however you want to say this, this is going to follow Jordan Poole for a long time. Matter of fact, his entire career. And this is for a young guy, for this to happen, this didn't happen later in his career. Okay. This happened at a young age. And for the rest of his career, for the rest of, if he's trying to make brand deals, if he tries to talk shit to other players, if he tries to like puff up, be a different kind of player, this moment will go, it'll go back to him. And among one of these things, like Jim, if you remember, like the situation that Jimmy Butler had in that playoffs with Wiggins and Cat. And you know how, and Wiggins and Cat are were much better players than Jordan Poole. And for them to be basically mentally destroyed by it, it was a lot. And to this day, I don't think Cat has recovered in the playoffs. To this day, and only the reason Wiggins really recovered, he got a change of environment into a championship environment, and it was like a ground upward. But had Wiggins stayed in, I don't know, Minnesota, he would have probably been one of the biggest busts in NBA history. And that tells you a lot, like how much the game is, as much as it is physically, is mentally. And Draymond took that away from Jordan Poole. And we don't know for the rest of his career if that's going to be a moment. You know what I'm saying? And if that's going to affect him. Hopefully it doesn't. You know, hopefully he can define the odds. And hopefully he can get out of this rut that he's in, because he's in his own head. And the leadership on the team, because Draymond is important to Jordan Poole. As much as I want to hate on Draymond, Draymond was an important piece to Jordan Poole's development. You know what I'm saying? And Jordan doesn't have that no more, because Draymond took that away. And there's only so much Steph can do, because Steph is like, you know, like you don't want a guy to that caliber. Like, you can't really do the stuff that Steph can do. So what can he really teach you? You know what I'm saying? You need to learn all the other stuff, the intangibles, which Draymond carries, the kind of player Draymond is. And you're not getting that no more. And I think the respect of the locker room went away with Draymond. Same with all the young guys. I don't even think he has a voice in there no more. And he said it himself. I don't really have a voice with that preseason. And among another thing with that preseason, like Klay Thompson, what did you think about him showing up out of shape? And how Golden State's front office handled that as well.
Well, I think they have a Klay problem in general when it comes to just Klay listening to the team or any kind of leadership. We know for a fact that Klay doesn't really listen to Steve Kerr. He proved that last year when Steve asked him to come off the bench, and his answer to that was a big fuck you. Meanwhile, Steph Curry was willing to come off the bench to start the playoffs last year. Draymond was willing to come off the bench in this year's playoffs. Like, you have to be able to put your pride aside and do what's best for the team. And it's not like Steve Kerr was asking him to come off the bench for the remainder of last year. He was just saying, start off after missing a couple of years. It's okay to come off the bench, get into a rhythm because you have a minutes restriction anyway. So, start off easier against kind of easier competition in a way against other bench players and get yourself in rhythm. And back into the flow of things. But no, Klay's pride wouldn't allow him to do that. So I'm not sure exactly in terms of what they wanted from him in the offseason. I don't blame Klay for not being able to play pickup games or workout. It sounds to me like there was a restriction put on him for him to not do that. It wouldn't surprise me if the team did not want him to play those pickup games because that's what caused the second injury the year before that, right? So I can understand the team's perspective if that's what they wanted from him. And it in that regard, I understand that Klay could not come into game playing shape coming into this season. So I don't necessarily blame him for that. That's just a difficult situation. But Klay, obviously, this year is, all restrictions are off. He doesn't even have to miss a back-to-back game anymore. So in terms of his overall health, he's back. So he has a major opportunity this offseason to work on his game, play those pickup games, and come back much better than he was this year.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't think Klay being off out of shape really was an issue all season long, except for the beginning, because we used so much of so many games to get him in shape, which sucked because you should use those games to get your young guys going and develop.
Yeah.
And that took a lot away as a team. And you as management, once again, Jim, that is not Klay's job. It's not Jordan Poole's job. It's not Kuminga's job. It's your job. Do your job. Do your but how can we ask these players to do their job when the people in charge aren't doing their job? So if you can't get your players to make sure that they're in shape before the season starts, if you can't figure out a rest, even if he's not in shape, like way to figure out to develop these players throughout the year or a plan or something instead of this random, like let's say, like F it. Let's see what happens. It's basically how the whole season felt. The whole season was basically, I said this to somebody, like when how do you feel the Warriors lost and out of the playoffs? I'm like relieved. I'm tired of them stressing me out all year long. Like all year long. This is like it's not like they just started stressing us out in the playoffs. It was an all year long battle. Win three, lose three, down three. Like we were just acting like we couldn't decide whether we wanted to go for Victor or Larry. We were deciding, is it Larry or Victor? Who are we going? And we just go up, down, up, down, up, down. I'm like, pick a side. And it was the only team you'd be like, yo, when they're locked in, they're really a championship team. And then you'd be like, you watch them again, you'd be like, yo, they're so unserious. You can't have those opinions on a team. That's undisciplined. You have the talent. You have whatever it is you can do to figure out how to use it. If you can't use your talent, that's on you. And moving on to like the regular season, as we go into it, that was part of the problem. You realize the rotations are not working. You're messing around with the rotation 60 games of the season, 70 games of the season. Like, be for real. By the 50 game after the All-Star break, your rotation should be set. These are the guys you're playing in the playoffs and how you're going to play it because you need to have those runs. Okay. So, what did you think of Steve's experimenting with the lamp instead of developing Kuminga and Moody? What did you think about and the lack of trade deadline, the road struggles? Talk to me about the regular season.
Okay, so obviously, what they the moves that they did not make at the trade deadline and Steve Kerr are two separate issues. Let's just get to Steve Kerr first, and I don't even know where to start. But basically, there are just a lot of fundamental issues when it comes to Steve Kerr, and he just gets all the rope in the world. And even I wanted to give him rope coming into this season because he just won a championship. He won the fourth championship. And when you win that championship, you have rope. And to begin the season, I would not say the problems that they had were really Steve Kerr's problems as much as it was the roster construction and the beef that Kerr and the front office were having, which is that the front office wanted to move forward with the kind of the two timeline plan with James Wiseman, Jonathan Kuminga, Moody, and obviously with more kids on the roster, guys like PBJ and Rollins. That's like five babies on the roster, of a roster that you believe is a championship caliber roster. They just won the championship. But that's too many kids. There's no NBA team in the history of the NBA where you're winning with a whole bunch of kids. That's just not reality. Kids don't have the experience that you need to be great, possession by possession in the playoffs against the most elite guys in the NBA. That just doesn't happen. So Kerr was right in that regard. And so he was having problems trying to incorporate James Wiseman into the equation, and he is a generational tanker. The kid just doesn't know how to play the game of basketball. He knows what he knows, which is to try to score in whatever ways that he knows, but that's about all he knows. He, defensively, like nobody taught him how to actually play winning basketball. So you can't put a guy like that at the center position and expect success. Even moving him to the Pistons, I think the Pistons actually got worse once they got him. I think they won like one out of 20 games. So that just was terrible from the get-go, and trying to incorporate that, forcing Wiseman down the throat of the team was a major problem. And then, you had a secondary problem, which is never replacing Otto Porter from the championship team last year, on top of losing Gary Payton. And those two were, they were two of the most critical pieces to winning a championship last year. They were literally numbers one and two, next to Steph Curry in terms of overall plus minus. So that just goes to show what the Warriors were missing. And obviously, Anthony Lamb being a two-way player, that was not the answer come playoffs. And we saw that. We saw that Lamb basically got no rotational minutes come playoffs, and yet they wasted 50 games with him playing a bunch of minutes. And obviously, they got GP2 back in the middle of the season, but they never replaced Otto. I was begging for them to replace either Anthony Lamb or Jamichael Green, because neither of them were a viable piece come playoffs. And they both proved that to be the case. The Warriors ended up going tiny. They ended up going with four guard lineups, which fundamentally, defensively, you cannot succeed with a four guard lineup in which a couple of them are a hole defensively. Like Jordan Poole is a hole. Klay Thompson has become a hole. So you put those two alongside like Dante DiVincenzo and GP2, and you're just comically small. It's not a winning recipe. You had Moses Moody playing power forward in the playoffs and guarding LeBron James. That is not a recipe for success. So the front office needed to be able to see all these things and make adjustments. They didn't do it at the trade deadline when they had a chance to get OG. They didn't do it at the buyout market. And it's like I was saying since game five of the season that they needed to make these moves. And the fact that I could see it and the front office couldn't bother to see it, I mean, that should tell you something about them.
Yeah, for sure. And I already knew from like the trade deadline, outside of the GP2 pick, which is just them fixing the mistake they made to start the season with to begin with. They really were not active. Everybody else is trying to get better. Like, and you didn't have to make too much happen. Lakers turned Russell Westbrook into Vandal, Beasley, D'Lo, and then they gave out a second round pick for Rue. That's like, come on. You know what I'm saying? Like, there is out there. There's teams that are willing to sell cheap, move around, and they were. It's just that they were content. I don't think they made calls. They wanted to go maybe for like a big fish, like OG. I mean, you can't just be so narrow minded and just chilling. Yeah, as
Yeah, I
just Bob.
completely agree with you.
I don't know what Bob was really doing. I mean, I think he was so content that he was cool. Like Steve Kerr was worried about Lamp minutes during the trade deadline, and Bob was worried about his next podcast. We got a team full of podcasters trying to be NBA players and GMs. We got problems here. You know, like cut the mic. I wanted to step on these equipments. Move it, bro. Leave that stuff to all the people that don't play basketball on a professional level and you don't have an important job. Bob out here on vacation and stuff. Like, I don't know what he was doing during this trade deadline. But to me, I'm gonna tell you, Jim, not once did I believe he was gonna get something. I'm like, I'm not moved. I know they're not doing nothing. They in there, you know, when you get a bunch of paperwork and stuff and you just pretending to type on your phone, trying to pretend to look busy. That's basically the Golden State Warriors during the trading line. Just pretend to look busy. We're gonna release fake little news. We'll be like, oh, you know, Toronto wants an arm and a leg. This is the fake stuff we're gonna send in. Oh, blah, blah, blah. Whole time they're not even picking up the phone or calling anybody. Line is disconnected. That's how I felt. And then it showed to the playoffs. And as we transition into the playoffs, why did we fail? I can tell you a lot. Here's my take on the playoffs. I think as you get older in the NBA as a superstar, you deserve more help. You know what I'm saying? Especially if you're a proven champion and a proven leader like Steph Curry. He got older and it just seems like Golden State went on the mindset. You know what? Let's see if he can carry us. I'm sorry. He's not 25, okay? He's not 27. He's even though technically, I believe he's in his physical prime. I think it keeps getting better, which is just a freak athlete. But everybody runs out of burners. And when you have Steph running off ball this much on offense and defense, people always be like, play him more minutes. And I'm one of those people that always says, play Steph Curry more minutes. But when I calm down and relax, I think about it. You can only play him more minutes if you play him to his strength. let him be on ball with the pick and rolls and stuff. But if you're having him play this motion offense and this stupid split action and all this stuff happening, you can't really play him more minutes because his 30 minutes, 40 minutes is another NBA player's 80 minutes, a regular 80 minutes. Because when you're moving nonstop, it's impossible to play. You're going to be gassed. And as we've seen him play, we realized his legs gave up. He's carrying offensively. We realize him. He could be a point guard. You see the way he is when he's like he would put any day he could average 10 or more assists if he changes his play style. And there's a whole argument on, you know, people that say he's not a true point guard. It just goes out the window. Every year we see it. It just throws out the window. It has no credibility because that's who Steph is. He is him. And he carried us through that Sacramento series. And people forget that he's also coming back from an injury. And he was hurt. And he still did it despite all that. And he comes out, and to me, the team was disconnected this entire playoffs. You're telling a bunch of guys who don't like each other, which I bring it back to Draymond off season and regular season issues. Like his voice was not carried in. You got a team who don't respect the coach because you see Steve sitting in the huddle talking about, hey, don't play hero ball. Don't shoot these 3-pointers. They come out of the huddle. What do they do? Shoot 4 or 5 3-pointers in a row. You would think they're down 30. The way they're acting. It'd be like a 2-point game and they're nonstop shooting threes. And the coach is telling them not to do it and they do it. And then he comes into the press conference and instead of saying, you know, we played poor and I didn't like it, he gonna puff his chest up and stick 10 toes down. Yeah, that's Klay Thompson. I'm taking those shots I need to serve. I don't want to hear that. I really don't. Because we don't want to hear all that extra stuff. We want to hear why you didn't think it's okay to change. Mid-game adjust. Stop using the playoffs as a feel-out game. I've never seen a coach come out and use actual playoff games as feel-out games. Sir, that is what the regular season is for. You know what I'm saying? That is what the regular season is for. Have some shame. Why do you think Jim we failed?
Well, you said a lot. In regards to Steve Kerr, I'm glad that you have that opinion, and I'm glad that you feel a sense of frustration and you want some accountability, because too many fans in the Warriors fan base give him a pass by saying, "Oh, he's a great coach, so it doesn't matter. He won 4 championships, so it doesn't matter." So at the end of the day, no matter what criticism you have for the guy, well, he has 4 championships, so we can't say anything. Well, the actions that he took were completely nonsensical, and this fan base has no answer for why he did those things. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter because you shouldn't question him just because he won the championships. I mean, essentially, the guy reverted back to 2016 before he had Mike Brown. He made a lot of senseless decisions that cost the Warriors an opportunity to get out of that Lakers series. And he made enough bad moves to basically lose the Kings series as well. They probably should have just lost that series. And the reason they won it is obviously because Curry went rogue. He had to give the team a speech on like asking for trust. He's like, "I trust you guys. I believe that we have enough with this group to be able to advance, but I ask for some of that faith and trust in return." And it's really sad to me that Curry has to make a statement like that, given who he is to this team and this franchise. Like, that's Steve Kerr's job, to put the confidence in his players to believe in Curry. If that was the direction of the coach, then the team would follow suit. But there is no direction. There is no such direction. They tell Steve Kerr, just he tells them the same thing over and over, which is to default to their basic shit, the motion offense, have Curry move without the ball and start games off this way, just lackadaisical and casual against teams that are completely and utterly prepared for what they're going to do should they go to that route. And the league figured out the motion offense probably like 6 years ago. Even KD talked about when he was with the Warriors in the playoffs, called out the motion offense, saying that in the playoffs, this thing becomes limited because teams know what we're doing. We have to go to some other simpler sets that are going to help produce points in an easier way. So, and now I don't know if you saw, but the fact that Steve Kerr was not running the pick and roll was getting national attention. CBS Sports, some guy, he
I saw it.
that that art.
At one point, I don't know if you remember in game four, we spammed in that first half and we were incredible. And then all of a sudden we just said, forget it. You know what I'm saying? And just turned it off. You know what I'm saying? And it's crazy that Steve acted like that because the whole world's watching. Like you have NBA players tweeting, like, why would you take the ball? You're doing the opponents a favor. Like instead of opponents, like Jim, opponents have to figure out a way to get the ball out of the star player's hands. Golden State, not when you're facing Golden State, because Steve Kerr will do that job for you.
Exactly. And I've been saying that for many years. It doesn't matter if it's the playoffs or the regular season. You are making it easier for the other team to guard you because you're voluntarily taking your $40, $50 million player off the ball where he's going to naturally be less effective. There's not a superstar in the history of the NBA that has been used in this manner, the way Steve Kerr uses him. And the thing about it is going into the Lakers series, most smart fans knew that the key plan in that series is to take AD out of the paint. And as a matter of fact, that has been the recipe to every Warriors championship to this day. By making the other team's defense vulnerable and ineffective, that is how Steph Curry and Draymond together changed the game. Started back in 2015. When they were down 1-2 against the Cavaliers because they were losing to Timofey Mozgov and LeBron in the pick and roll. Andrew Bogut was not cut out for the job. So the Warriors decided to attack Mozgov in the pick and roll instead. And they forced the Cavs to adjust to them instead of the other way around. And that's been the same against all the other elite teams that the Warriors faced in those championship years, whether it was like OKC. Right, taking out Steven Adams and Serge Ibaka out of the paint to make their defense more vulnerable. Whether it's against the Rockets, where you got Capella out of there and forced them to go small. And when you go small, obviously the Warriors are going to have an advantage. And if you continue to stay big, well, then you're going to continue to compromise your defense because what's supposed to be your strongest defensive player, which is usually the center, is being taken out of the paint. He has no choice but to be out of the paint when the Warriors are using the high pick and roll and forcing him up from out of the key area. So that's always been the key. And they figured that out and never really relinquished that plan when Brown joined the coaching staff back in 2016 and 17. And even last year, right? How did they win against the Nuggets, against Jokic? How did they win in five games? They ran pick and roll against them all day. And
Yeah, we
Jokic
abused
had no answers, right? The one game that they lost, Steve Kerr decided to get casual and they started running motion stuff all day. That's how they ended up losing that one game. Okay. So the plan all along should have been to take advantage of AD out of the paint, attack D'Lo, who is a cone on defense. LeBron, like, he's not the same kind of defender that he wants. Well, he stopped playing possession by possession defense a long time ago. And instead of taking advantage of mismatches, Kerr decided to, like you said, do a feel out game. After coaching the Warriors for 9 years, he should know inside out what he needs to do in the playoffs, but he needed a feel out game. Like, are you serious? Like, this is not, you don't hear that from an experienced coach. And that's what he did. That's why they lost game one. And guess what? When they ran that pick and roll in the fourth quarter, they erased a 14-point deficit in the blink of an eye. But because they didn't do it throughout the entire game, it was just too late. There was just not enough time to overcome that deficit. So they should have learned after game one, but they continue to mess around. And then they win the second one. And then the third one, again, they kind of come out casual. The game plan is all messed up and they can't, they could, and then they have to overcome the referees. The whistles, the generational whistles for the Lakers on top of that. And obviously, they couldn't win game three. And then game four, Kerr just threw that. He threw it. GP2 is their best defensive player off the bench. This is not even a debate. It's not even close. GP2 is a generational defender. The way he defends out in the perimeter, he guy is so elite. and his ability to finish in the pick and roll was elite. He had, I believe he has something like 17 points on like 9 shots or something like that. The guy was preposterously effective. And yet Steve Kerr decided to take him out for the final 10 minutes of the fourth quarter and elected to go with Moody instead, and essentially went away from the pick and roll against AD and started going to a pick and roll against LeBron James instead, which actually defeats the purpose of making that pick and roll effective, because that doesn't take out their anchor out of the paint. And that's what makes that pick and roll so effective. And the fact that Steve Kerr just went away from everything that was working and decided to go with like some wild gamble, playing Moody the entire 10 minutes of that fourth quarter, you know, he cost that game. So Kerr essentially threw away two games that they should have won. They had home court advantage, and he just threw that game one away. It is completely and utterly unacceptable. And then on top of that, he's playing Jordan Poole just nonstop. No matter what he does, like that the final game, he's played him 23 minutes, and he's a liability on defense every single time. So a coach who was serious, a coach who was committed to winning and defense, would never continuously play a guy that is continuously bleeding points. And Kerr went to that anyway. He could have given all those minutes to GP2 and Moody, or even Dante. Even Dante wasn't having a good series. And if guys are not playing well, you have to shorten your rotation. You need to go with a 7-man rotation if necessary. You're in a do or die situation. So obviously Jordan was a complete and utter liability. His confidence was shot and out the window. He was ineffective both ways. Occasionally he would be effective offensively, but the fact that Kerr had Poole sharing the floor with Steph Curry and camped Steph Curry in the corner and allowing the offense to flow through Jordan instead of Steph Curry is completely and utterly backwards, because Steph Curry he's a generational creator, you know, so he makes the job really easy for his teammates by creating easy opportunities and easy looks that he creates for them. Meanwhile, Jordan Poole had not shown an ability to consistently create any kind of offense for his own team. And yet you gave the ball to this guy instead of your all-time player who's camped in the corner. Like, that doesn't make any sense. You can't waste these possessions running the offense through anybody but your best player, especially on the road. And then on top of that, you saw how ineffective Jordan Poole was defensively. You could have gone a different route so that you're not so small playing these tiny 3-guard and 4-guard lineups. You had Kuminga. You even had Lamb if you needed to get away from those small lineups to give yourself a better opportunity to have a chance to win these games on the road from a defensive standpoint. I understand that. I don't disagree with the notion that Kuminga in some ways is still raw and that power forward is a difficult position for him to play, but it's certainly better to have him there than like,
how did you want him to use Kuminga?
So they were going with these 4-guard lineups. Putting in Kuminga automatically gets rid of that tiny lineup, right? And it automatically places other guys in their natural, more natural positions, right? So instead of, and also, there were many segments of the games where all of Curry, Draymond, Wiggins, and GP2 were out of the floor at the same time. And that just can't be. You're talking about three of your best defensive players. They cannot be all out at the same time. At least one of them has to be on the floor at all times. And Steve Kerr was just breaking these kind of sacred basketball rules that you're not supposed to break. You don't play 3-guard, 4-guard lineups come playoffs against the best teams in the world. You're trying to cheat the game of basketball. The basketball gods, you know, they rain down on Steve Kerr's horrendous decisions. Like, these are basketball crimes that he's committing on so many different levels, not just offensively, but of course, defensively. So, yeah, how can you use Kuminga? Well, get him in there and bench Jordan Poole. That automatically improves your defense. And if defense is your biggest problem and you're trying to get stops, you got to put in the right pieces to make sure that your team has an opportunity to do that. You can't do that if Moody is your power forward. There you go.
You're right. 100%. And the thing is, the way I look at it, like, he be treating Kuminga like he leaked his news or something. don't know. It seems personal. Like it doesn't seem basketball. Like Kuminga maybe had a one bad stretch in that Kings series, like for like 5 minutes. It's not like he was in the whole game. And Steve Kerr said, "Bet, glued to the bench."
Yeah, it's disgusting.
It
I,
seems personal.
part of it, we know that he is in disagreement with the ownership of using kids and stuff like this. And I agree with him. But when shit hits the fan and you need to go to your best pieces possible to win a game, regardless of your personal takes, regardless of your personal desires and your beliefs or whatever, you got to do what's best for your team to have a chance to win these games. And if that means you got to go back to Kuminga and, you know, you got to, as a manager of the team, you have to instill confidence in your players, no matter what their age is, and try to get the most out of them. And given the fact that Jordan Poole was not giving them anything on either side of the floor, there's no good reason to continue to go to him. He was making, you know, worse mistakes than whatever Kuminga was doing from the standpoint of making some mistakes on the floor. So, I mean, let's put it really simply, who is a better defender? Jonathan Kuminga or Jordan Poole? I mean, that's a rhetorical fucking question. It's not even fucking close. Kuminga, you know, that's what he was doing throughout the course of this regular season, is playing defense and improving as a perimeter defender, a guy who would play POA. And, you know, the guy, he did his best. And to not give him any opportunity and, you know, go tiny and go to Moody and all these things. By the way, what did you do to Moody? You sat him all throughout the regular season. You didn't give him a shot. All of a sudden, he's playing a crucial role for you down the stretch in the playoffs over a guy like even Gary Payton. Like, what exactly is your game plan? You needed to have a game plan of developing certain guys so that they'll be ready come playoffs. And whatever it is that Kerr did, like, none of it makes sense. You played Lamb the whole season and you didn't use him for a single fucking minute when the playoffs came. What the fuck is that? Moody, you glued him to the bench all year and then you play him in the playoffs. You think maybe he would have been even better if he had more of an opportunity to grow and actually play in the regular season? And then why the hell did you play Kuminga if you're gonna just sit him the entire playoffs for making a couple of mistakes and the first game of the playoffs? What is this? There's no game plan behind anything he's doing. It's illogical. So from Kerr's perspective, from the standpoint of Kerr, right? Number one, he refuses to use the best weapon the team has, which is Steph Curry in the pick and roll, just because he doesn't like to use the pick and roll because he thinks it makes too many guys cold or some shit like that. He wants to keep everybody happy. He wants everybody to touch the ball, regardless of how much they're getting paid. He wants all lives to fucking matter and the stupid fucking offense of his. And so, number one, he's deprioritizing the best weapon that he has. That in and of itself is counterintuitive and ineffective come playoffs. We saw that against the Lakers. We saw that against the Kings. The Warriors had to go away from Kerr's stupid ass plan in game seven to actually get out of that series. So there's one. Number two, he's horrible at developing talent. What is he doing with all the young guys? There's not a one young guy who has developed properly under this guy. You know, even PBJ, they needed size, they needed shooting. Well, PBJ is a pretty damn, he's the best shooter they got at the power forward center position. JaMychal Green is pretty good at it. PBJ is certifiably better at it. Defensively, they're about similar. I would say PBJ is probably a little bit better than JaMychal Green from a fundamental standpoint. So you could have been developing PBJ all along. To you know, pro look at the way Keegan Murray was used for the Kings. There are ways to find effective roles for even if they're young pieces, if they're definitively good at something, right? That's what good coaches do. They find the talents of these players that are in the league for a reason, instead of diminishing them.
Jim, you mentioned PBJ,
Yeah.
and my thing to you is, and Kuminga, because you're fond of them, especially for this season. For the future and the upcoming season and the off season, are you with keeping these kids?
No, Kuminga's out. He's out. He's got to be out. His
Are you with me? I'm asking you. Like, I'm not asking. Okay, let me put it this way. Do you think, what do you think, what do you want to happen, and what do you think is going to happen?
In the offseason?
Yeah, what do you think the plan is in the offseason? With everything,
Okay.
when you say
Okay.
Draymond, Poole, Kamenga,
Gotcha.
Klay, you have a whole lot of decisions to make this offseason. It's going to be
Okay.
a messy offseason.
So from an ideal standpoint, Bob Myers is apparently deciding whether he wants to get the most money paid for a GM ever or some shit like that. If he wants to be stupid and pass up on it, great. He's not a good leader. We talked about that already. The guy is too close to the players, and his value at this point is like the fact that he's close to these players more than what he can actually produce as the GM of the team. I don't know if his hands are tied because of Lake Up or whatever, but if he can't do his job properly, if he can't properly recognize the flaws of his roster any better than a fan could, then he doesn't belong in that position. And if he goes, maybe Steve Kerr goes too. And the ideal scenario for this team is to get a new coach because Steve Kerr, there's too many obstacles that you have to overcome with this guy. Like I said, he's horrible at developing talent. He doesn't know how to use the best player on the planet, and he cares more about his system than the well-being and the winning nature of his own team. So, and he, you know, he's too privileged. He thinks he can do anything he wants and get away with it. And so far, he's getting away with it. And so this is not okay. So hopefully the coach is gone. From a roster construction standpoint, I believe the starting lineup can stay. I believe Klay Thompson deserves one more year to see that, you know, with a full offseason to work on his body, come back with a better mentality. Hopefully he kind of gets over this me, like all about me. I want to become an all-star. I want to play for Kobe and not for Steph Curry and the team. And like all this like personal agenda that he has, he needs to overcome those things. Obviously Draymond, he's not going anywhere, whether anybody wants him to or not. At this point, he's got one more year left on his contract, and I'm sure the team will figure it out from there. I think he's still a crucial and vital piece, despite his traitorous nature, the way he talks about LeBron, the Lakers, the way he slips up to them, the fact that he signed with a clutch team, and the fact that he's kind of like a mouthpiece for them through the media is really disgusting. But I have a way of being able to separating, you know, the on-court activities versus the off-court activities. I have a problem with some of the things that Draymond does on the court as well, but from an overall standpoint, his effectiveness in the pick and roll when they go to it as a secondary playmaker, he's elite. Defensively, he's elite. Positionally, he's elite. There's not a lot of guys at his size that can do what he does. I believe they have. You literally saw them win a championship last year with these guys. The problem was the lack of depth and the youth and all these things, right? So we saw this season that Jordan Poole has to go. There's no other choice about it. He gets paid max money, but he can't finish a game. He can't be in the finishing lineup because he's a defensive liability. That alone makes him not worth having keeping on the team. As you said, there's too much drama with him and Draymond, him getting punched by Draymond. Their relationship will never be the same. So that's another factor. And then there's a and then this is also ultimately better for Jordan Poole's career. You know, he if you build a team around him rather than forcing him to fit into this situation where he's a small guy forced to, you know, play defense when that's not his suit. So it's just not a good fit anymore. He deserves to be on another team without all the scrutiny and grow on his own terms. I think he's a star in the making, but he needs the proper opportunity and not be asked to do something that
This
he's not good
offseason,
at doing.
Jim, that's where I kind of hold back because I feel like there is a lot of moves and stuff that they have to do this offseason. You know, nothing, if either you got to go fully drastic, like the big scope, or you got to figure out if you want to try them a little bit till the All-Star break and then
Can I
make it.
tell you something, Anna?
Yeah.
If they didn't have Poole, or if they were at the very least able to sit him, they would have won the Lakers series. Even with all the other problems, they
Nope.
would have won it
No, they would.
because they
No, they
wouldn't have
would.
had the defensive problems that he was creating for the team every time he was on the floor. Every single time he's a cone. They were attacking him relentlessly. It wouldn't have happened. It's kind of like, look at the Heat. The Heat were a middle of the road team this whole season with Tyler Hero in there. As soon as Tyler Hero gets hurt, all of a sudden they look like the best team out of the East. You know, that's not a coincidence. I'm telling you, when you have a hole from a defensive standpoint and you replace that hole with a more capable player, everything can change for your team. So Jordan Poole, like if you replaced him just simply with Gary Payton, they would have won the series. So he no longer belongs on this team. Like his agent is not happy with what's happening with him on this team. They cannot wait long enough for one of Klay or Curry to diminish too much for him to enter the starting lineup somehow. It just doesn't work no matter how you slice it with Klay, Curry, and Poole. So Poole is out of here. The other guy that's out of here is Kuminga. Kuminga, his agent is also very unhappy. His client didn't get a single meaningful minute in the playoffs, and he's not growing under this team. And Kuminga, as a seventh overall pick, it seems pretty clear that he wants to become a starter and he wants to become a star, make his money and make his mark in this league. And that's not going to happen with the Warriors. The Warriors can't give him that opportunity because Wiggins plays Kuminga's position at the three, right? And Kuminga has proven himself to be not effective enough as a four to warrant having him on this team. Not only that, going into next year, the Warriors will absolutely get an actual power forward, an actual auto replacement after seeing what happened this season. So that means even less playing time for Kuminga, because a lot of his minutes came at the power forward position this year. And the fact that he's not going to get those minutes anymore means he's going to be an exclusive backup small forward. And he's not going to get enough minutes on this team. He's not going to be happy. He talked through the media saying that he demands more playing time. He thinks he's owed that. And I don't blame him for thinking that, but he's on a championship caliber roster. And that shows a sign of immaturity that the Warriors can't continue to hold on to. It's a misfit no matter how you slice it. You're not going to be able to keep him long term anyway. So there's no point in developing a guy that you know you're not going to be able to keep. So move him now for a proper piece that they can use right now, because he's eating up like $7 million worth of the team's salary, and they're not going to be able to re-sign him. So don't play stupid games. Take this seriously and get a viable piece, a veteran who doesn't care about playing time, but only cares about doing the right things, that's going to help the Warriors win games. Bottom line. So you talk about Poole is gone. Kuminga is gone. Hopefully this Rollins kid is gone too. No offense to him, but he's completely unready to play any kind of championship caliber role for this team. That's another spot. That's three spots that you can use as trading chips. Jermichael Green, obviously gone. Dante DiVincenzo, obviously gone. You have a bunch of pieces that you can replace now. Move these guys in a relevant trade. Look for guys like Kuzma, OG Anunoby, guys that are viable to play the power forward position, guys that can replace Draymond Green in a pinch, play alongside him so that they have strong size. They have another option offensively. And there's a lot of things that they can do, but they have to be very clear about the pieces that they need to move off this team.
Yeah, the new CBA ain't gonna allow us to do much. You know what I'm saying? So
we got. Also, if you want to keep Draymond, you have to move JP. Like from a money standpoint,
Draymond and his podcast equipment can go to Portland for all I care about. If I see them pay him over $100 million, yeah, we're doomed. There's no point, because no CBA is gonna allow you to go over the tax no more. And with Draymond making that much money, you can't make that any improvement, really. Draymond and Klay contract. So, to me, the decisions are going to be made between Draymond and Klay's contract. That's where it's at. You focused on all the other things that don't really, like, are not going to move this team. What matters is, what will Dray sign for? What will Klay sign for? That's what you got to worry about. Once you got that situated, the other pieces are small pieces you can move around. Come trade deadline, you don't even worry about them in the offseason. Also, do you want to pair Steph with an actual legitimate co-star? I mean, that's something at this age you got to actually think about. Everybody else gets to get a fighter jet. To me, when I look at even guys like Jimmy Butler has a much better legit two than Steph does. You know what I'm saying? Even Jimmy Butler has a better number two than Steph does. I'll take Bam any day with Steph. Any day. And Jaylen Brown this summer, the Celtics, if they can't come out, have a decision to make. Are you willing to spend $700 million on two guys who can't get you wins? I don't think they're going to budge for that. I don't think they're going to pay him. So we got to figure out, is it time for Steph to get a legitimate number two? Not a two we can play around with. Hey, this guy's the number two for the team for these games. This guy's the number two for Steph these games. No, I need a legitimate number two, a guy we know. If it's not Steph, it's him. We know if it's not Jokic, it's Murray. If it's not AD, it's LeBron. If it's not KDE, it's Devin Booker. If it's not Jimmy, it's Bam. Like, we don't have that with Steph. He's out here saying, you know, today it could be Draymond, the number two. Oh, tomorrow it could be Wiggins. Oh, the other day it could be Klay. Oh, maybe Jordan Poole will come off and be. We can't play those games. You know what I'm saying?
No. Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
My question to you is this. Do you think, even with all the flaws of the roster, even all the imperfections of the players that are on the roster, if Steve Kerr had a correct scheme against the Lakers, going with a pick and roll from the jump and spamming the shit out of that and maximizing his defense as much as possible, do you think the Warriors would have won that Lakers series?
Can you repeat that again?
The whole thing?
it just like the point, I think I lost you on what I
Okay.
thought.
If Steve Kerr came out with the correct game plan against the Lakers with a high pick and roll against AD, and if he minimized the damage for his own team from a defensive standpoint by not playing four guard lineups, playing Kuminga a little bit more and whatever the case, playing GP2 more, obviously. Do you think the Warriors would have beaten the Lakers?
Yes, without a doubt. And
Okay,
just
so the
so, but
reason
Jim,
I.
also, I'm gonna hold you on that before you continue it, because that's not a fair question. And I'm gonna tell
Why is.
you,
Okay, go ahead.
because even if Lonnie Walker was not freaking Michael Jordan for a fourth quarter, we win that series because we go 2-2, win game
But I'm
three,
trying to tell you
and
that that's
fine.
Steve
Yeah.
Kerr's fault.
No, but I'm saying no, that it is Steve Kerr's fault, but that's also like another factor that came in that was quite like
Right,
very.
it's a but it's a
Yeah.
it's a it's an
But you
adjustment
missed,
that Steve
yeah.
Kerr failed to make.
My
He should
thing
have
is,
had GP. That's
yeah.
why I was saying you got to have GP2 in there to close the game,
Could,
not
I'm saying,
Moody.
if you have GP2 there closing the game, like, I'll give you that. To go counter your point, yes, I believe we would have beaten the Laker team.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, so the
However,
reason.
the Nuggets, no. Watching them play right now, if Klay and Draymond don't show up in that Nuggets series and they played like the way they played the entire playoffs, hell no, Jim.
Right, but you're
Hell no.
making, but
And
you're
that's what I'm
making.
trying to tell you. Whether Steve adjusts or not, whether Steph goes on the pick and roll, he can't score 50 every game. That's not happening, Jim. Like,
You're
with
assuming
this
that he
team,
needs to
he.
score 50 points off the pick and roll.
No, I know I
That's
need.
not
No,
what
I'm
it
not,
is.
not 50. I mean, I even for him to get to 35, because the pick and roll is going to take a lot out of him. You know what I'm saying? And they're going to adjust and they're going to end up probably, Mike Malone's probably going to get that ball out of his hands. By game two, the ball will not be in Steph's hands. They will
If the
trap
ball
him.
is not in, if the ball is not in Steph's, I'm telling you right now, if the ball is not in Steph's hands in that series against the Nuggets, the Warriors have won that series. I'll tell you why. It's because that means they are trapping Steph Curry out of the pick and roll, and that means they're playing 4-on-3. And there's no team in the history of the NBA that have beaten the Warriors on a 4-on-3
You're
situation.
missing my point, Jim. Yes, that's how bad the Warriors' stars have been. They couldn't make open shots even when he was being trapped. He was literally like outside of, I don't know what game was it, game three? Yeah, I believe outside of game three, was it, no, game five. I don't know which game. I gotta recall. He literally was basically the Magic Johnson of
I
like
think you're talking about game four.
game four. He put on a classic stuff.
Yeah, he did. And they should have won that game. I'm telling you, they should have won that
And
game.
because they couldn't make, despite all, if you throw it, every mistake that Clay, Steve Kerr did, they themselves couldn't even play 4-on-5 while he was getting trapped. They
No,
couldn't.
they had that game won until Steve Kerr went away from the pick and roll in the
Yeah,
fourth quarter
I'm
and then
saying,
took out GP2 on top of
you're
that.
missing my point. I said, despite Steve Kerr's mistake, they couldn't make shots. Klay was getting open shots.
They were getting wide open layups, Nana. They were getting wide open layups and
Draymond
dunks.
was smoking wide open layups. Okay. Whether you like it or not, Jim, Klay and Dre show up. You worry about all these other extra things. If Klay, because Steph showed up, if Klay and Dre show up with Steph, we don't lose any game.
Do you know how
We
many
don't
times
lose
Klay
any
has not
game.
shown up throughout the course of his career, even before, well before his
But
injury?
yes, I know this happened because back then or before in other series, we had things to cover that. We had players to cover it. If the Klay doesn't show up, we had depth. We don't have that this season. We never had depth this season. Okay. Therefore, if our stars, which is why our, like, if you look at the numbers between we still had the best starting unit in the league, which means if the starting unit plays to their fullest, we need to cover, we need to have enough of a lead or like a margin of error. Our margin of error was so little that we had to have that enough of a gap before the bench even walked in. Because we used to close our eyes for 2, 3 minutes every game, say, hey, we just need the bench to not go neutral. No, we don't even need them to win these minutes. Just go neutral or even go down by two or three. Because that's how low the margin of error was. And that is not sustainable. So I'm trying to tell you, no matter what kind of coaching Steve Kerr does, Steph would have run, if Steph was doing this, let's say, should have been the Lakers series, would have won the Lakers series with Steve Kerr's coaching, but we wouldn't have ran out of gas in that Nuggets series. We would have been.
They would have beaten the Lakers in five if they just did the pick and
Yeah,
roll against AD. So they wouldn't have run out of gas.
yes, they would have. Even
No,
if they,
they wouldn't have.
yes, because when does Steph run out of gas? About game six. So what is, Because they would have faced the Nuggets in about two more games, in two day rest, got the Nuggets. And by the Nuggets are a lot more athletic. They're faster. And you're forgetting, Jim, one more important fact about the Nuggets. They're just so much bigger. They're way bigger. Like, they make the Lakers look small, let alone us. They were making the Lakers look so small. And the Lakers were way bigger than us.
I
Okay?
don't. So I'm not sure you understand the power of playing 4-on-3 on a consistent basis in the NBA or in even any basketball. Think about this.
We're not
Four
playing 4-on-3.
on
We're playing 3-on-5, and we're at the disadvantage offensively. Even when we have Steph. That's what I'm trying to tell you, Jim. We are at the disadvantage.
No, no, no,
We're
no,
playing
no. I'm
3-on-5
saying
on offense. So
when you're
long as we have Looney and Draymond starting together, we're already at 3-on-5. So that's what I'm trying to tell you. So
No,
when
you're not at 3-on-5. You're only at 3-on-5 when you're
Yes, we
playing the
are.
motion offense with those two.
No,
The
even
problem is that
when
they constantly run that offense. If they ran the pick
No.
and roll, they would automatically have a 4-on-3 advantage. Because think about it.
That's
It's a
assuming
matter of
Draymond is
numbers.
serious. That's
It's a
assuming that Draymond would be a serious individual and play offense. He's not, which he's not. Thank you very much. He's not. Okay. He might give you one game, but he's not. So when
You
Steph is
just
old,
won a championship with him last year, with him playing that role. What do you mean?
and how was he in that finals? Please tell me, Jim. How was Draymond in that
He was
final?
inconsistent and they still were
Thank you
able to
very much.
win.
And the only reason we even got away with that finals is because Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum turned into freaking, I
And
don't know who the hell they were.
by
Because
the way, they
Andrew
played a
Wiggins.
different scheme.
Yeah.
The
But
Celtics played him a
no, we
different
gotta give
screen.
credit where credit's due. Because Andrew Wiggins stood up and stepped up, not just offensively, but defensively. Okay. I did not expect Wiggins to do what he did in that series. Okay. If Wiggins was just the way he was in the regular playoffs, or if he was in the way he was in the regular season, we don't win that series.
Okay. We've deviated too much from
Yeah. So
the
I'll
actual
say that
conversation.
when we go back to, like, I mean, we obviously have our disagreements in this off season. We pinpoint me personally saying there's so much to factor. I gotta actually think about this and sit down and see what is best for the team and what is best for really maximizing Steph Curry's career, which I think should be the primary priority.
Yeah,
Max,
if you can move, if you can.
not the damn future. I don't care about 10 years from now. You have a generational player, once in a lifetime player, maximize his window. And to me, that should be the goal this offseason. To you, I think you're on the same page. I don't know if you're at building a future end now, or if you're at maximize Steph's window. I'm at maximize his window. Do whatever you got to do to get him the help, the necessary team roster around him to maximize his greatness and the team and his window. Because not every day do you get a generational talent, a top five player in the NBA.
Yeah, he's a once in a lifetime player. We generally agree on what the Warriors need to do. I just think you're kind of underselling the importance of moving a piece like Jordan Poole because he's a complete and utter liability. And just he's a complete misfit. And he's eating up a lot of, after this season, he's gonna eat up a lot of the team's salary. That's a lot of salary that you're getting rid of.
But you're not gonna
So
get
that's
a
a
good
big deal.
value trading him right now. You gotta get
And
him back up.
Right. And you're going to get good value for him because there are teams that are absolutely going to value Jordan Poole. They know what he can do when he's in a different role, all right, and a different opportunity. The NBA is all about that kind
Yeah.
of stuff. So you
I think
move
you
him
maybe
and
you are just
Kuminga.
having like the different timing thing. I have, if we're moving Jordan Poole, it absolutely has to be at the trade deadline, not before it. If you move him before right now, you're toast. You're not getting anything back. You're better at keeping and hoping his potential is higher and it's better.
No,
So you
no,
gotta
no. He doesn't fit with the team. I'm telling you,
and
that
Jim, you're
defense
missing
is
my
not going
point.
to
Even
change.
if he doesn't fit with the team, you gotta put his value back up. It's to the ground right now. There's no way you move Jordan Poole and get anything remotely valuable. You don't.
No, you will. You
No, you
will.
won't.
This is what people said about
We can
James
agree to
Wiseman.
we can agree
No,
to disagree.
this is what people are telling me about James Wiseman over and over and over again. Don't trade him now. Don't trade him now. Don't trade him now. His value only got lower, lower, lower the longer you kept him. The
No,
longer Jordan Poole
him and
stays on
Dre
the
no,
Warriors, the longer
no, no,
the more
no.
his value is going to diminish.
No, you're missing my point. No. James Wiseman was a different case because he didn't even play before his value went down. Okay.
He
That
did
man was
play.
no, he barely played. His value was already to the ground after his rookie year. But before he even stepped foot back in. So
Guess
that's a
what?
different
They
story.
still you could have
Yeah.
still traded him for more than whatever they got during this deadline
They
that they
should have
did.
traded him.
But think about it.
They shouldn't have even drafted him, and they
No,
should have
think about
traded him in the
this.
rookie.
At the end of the day,
they were able to trade Wiseman and get GP2 back on the team. So, and people thought there's no way anybody would take Wiseman. But if you put a motherfucker out into the world and out into the universe and make him available, you'll be surprised which teams will be available to get that guy and how much they're willing to pay for him. Did you see what Minnesota paid to get Gobert on their team? Do you think that was maybe the stupidest thing you've ever seen? And they were still doing it anyway. There's a lot of deals like that out there. So you don't want this headache that is Jordan Poole and Kuminga, these guys that are unhappy, to continue on to next season. You want to start fresh and anew and build that team the entire season so that they'll be ready to come playoff, not have to make some fucking move that they don't, you know what I'm saying, in the middle of the season and then try to figure everything out from there. Like, that's not a good idea. So, you know, I agree with your notion that if they could find a really good deal to move a guy like Clay or even Draymond, I think Draymond is much harder to replace than Clay in terms of what he does for them defensively. But you think Jordan Poole's deal is hard to move. The guy, he's a young guy. He's a guy that's coming up, whereas Clay Thompson just showed whatever it is that he showed, and he's owed $40 million. So I think they'll have an easier time moving Poole than they have time. And you know that Clay has the potential to be better next year than he was this year.
I got you. Because I agree with you halfway, but let's not be stuck in the moment, because Clay has had his best, had a better season this year than he did last year in the regular season. He just lost his way in that series. And I guess as we're wrapping it up, I get what you're saying, Jim. I 100% do. And I agree with you halfway there. And I really appreciate you coming up in this series. But we can definitely talk about Golden State for hours. You know,
Because
it doesn't even feel like that. But you're right. You know, like, this team has a lot of fundamental problems. I don't know, maybe your opinion halfway down the summer, we can get back on this and figure out what's going on too and run it back, you know, because, you know, things do change and like things become more available and players want request trades out and a lot of things happen and more possibilities happen. So when this GM resigns or leaves or whoever we get, whatever is the situation, and whoever this offseason becomes a free agent and doesn't pick up their option, let's revisit this, because I really do want to see where you stand after that. Let's see if Wilma says, hey, I'm not keeping this option. Because that's a different – you work differently. You think differently. Right now, there's so many variables that have to change for you to even, like, think about what the team can actually value you do. And I really do appreciate you coming up. Super fun talking with you. Very passionate about the game, guys. Shout out to Jim. He's co-hosting Chasing Wins podcast with Andre. It's on Audacity. You guys go check that out. His Twitter tag is I will put on the list, but it's SHERIDANBLOG. Tweets he's one of Twitter legends. You know, one of my favorite accounts to follow. Whether he's rallying people up, pissing people off, or spitting facts, Jim is Jim, you know, Jim, and he's going to stand 10 toes down. He's not going to get punked. So, Jim, thank you so much for coming. I really appreciate it. I want to sign out with that. Do you have any last final thoughts or anything you want to say?
Yeah. Thanks for having me on. I think it was a really great conversation. Yes, we may disagree on certain nuances of what needs to be done, but in terms of the overall nature of what needs to be done, and in terms of the overall nature of where things are going wrong in terms of Steve Kerr's coaching style and things like that, we completely agree. And that's really important because a lot of people can't even agree on that. So this was a really good conversation. Our volumes will go up at times because we are, like you said, super passionate about this team. And that's okay. It's okay to have passionate conversations. It's okay to disagree as long as, you know, we keep it basketball like we do. And I totally enjoyed it. So, and I hope you did as well. And again, thanks for having me.
No problem. You take care. This is Nana signing out of episode 14 in the database. Appreciate y'all. Love y'all. Take care.